You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's been 46 years since Jane Fonda last appeared on Broadway, and judging from her fabulous performance in Moises Kaufman's new play called 33 Variations, you have to wonder why it's taken her so long to return. Miss Fonda plays an ailing musicologist obsessed with trying to understand why Ludwig van Beethoven spent 4 years near the end of his life writing variations on someone else's uninspired waltz.
The one you are listening to right this very moment.
This uninspired waltz, which does sound a little dull.
I kind of like it, actually. I'm
sure you've come to like it. The play is at the Eugene O'Neill Theater through the end of May. I'm very pleased that it brings Jane Fonda back to the show today. And your character comes to like the waltz at the end. But not at the beginning. She thinks it's uninspired.
Well, like it has been thought for 200 years that it was a mediocre, uninspiring waltz. And I cannot understand why later in his life, when he has little time left, when he's ill, when he's gone deaf, when he's working on major works like the Mass and the Night Symphony, he chooses to spend 3 years writing not one but 33 variations.
And by the end of the play,
I understand it as well. Yes, and it's very zen, actually, and beautiful. I think I find it very moving.
So this play was more than just getting into a character. It also the audience finds it an educational experience because we really think a lot about the creative process.
We never get shown the creative process, how art is made, the cost of making art, the psychic cost of making it. But what's so interesting, in my opinion, in this play, and what audiences seem to find very interesting, is that woven into this part of the story is a mother-daughter relationship that is extremely difficult and challenging. And in the process of understanding Beethoven's reason for doing 33 variations, she comes to see her daughter with new eyes.
And since we've covered so much material all in one
sentence.
Short sentence, we'll break that up, okay?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let's talk about just doing all these performances. You are very upfront about your age, so I'm sure you don't mind my mentioning that you're 71 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Were you nervous at all, that said, about taking on such a major role and committing to performing 8 shows a week?
Well, it did cross my mind that, since my body's falling apart, I might not be able to make
it. Falling apart?
Yeah, I have one hip is fake. And the other one is full of cortisone. And, everybody's got something when you start to get old. And mine is my joints.
Is that because you did all those exercise tapes?
No, I think it's genetic. So I thought, well, I wonder. And of course, then I wonder, will my voice, will they have to mic me? And the answer to everything is no problem. It's a blast. And my voice is very strong, and I'm having a really good time.
And you look like you've been on the stage all these years.
Yeah,
I guess
I
the last
like
time
that.
It was in Eugene O'Neill's Strange Interlude with Geraldine Page. Yeah. So is going back on the stage like riding a bicycle?
Yeah, and sex, and yeah.
You can stay away from it for a while, and somehow it just
comes right back. I don't know. It does for me anyway. I do a lot of public speaking, so I'm used to being on the stage anyway. But it just, I feel like all those interim 46 years was sort of getting me ready to come back and do it again and do it better than I ever did before.
Do you think you learned a lot from doing the other things, making the movies, for example?
What I learned a lot in the 46 years is who I am and to gain confidence in myself. The character that I play in 33 Variations owns her space. I mean, she's a very empowered woman, and she takes charge of the stage and of the audience. And my ability to do that would have been nil 46 years ago, and now it comes very naturally.
It's also a physical performance, because
I love it.
you have to reveal what's going on in her body,
yes,
very subtly, yeah, throughout the course of the play.
Yeah, and she has ALS, otherwise known as Lou Gehrig's disease. It affects different people in different ways. I looked at a lot of videos and chose how I wanted it to affect her little by little. And I enjoy doing that a lot.
That's part of the research of a role, doing a role. Did you research Beethoven as well?
A little bit. I read books on him, and there's some wonderful books on him and on his reasons for writing and what he went through to write this and what he was going through as a person. I've fallen in love with Beethoven in the course of doing this play. I mean, what a guy. What a guy. He was deaf. He would cut the legs off his pianos, put them on the floor, and lie on them while he played so he could feel the vibrations in his body. A complete revolutionary.
Well, it's amazing what he composed in these later years while he was going deaf, and then after he finally went deaf.
As he says to me in the play, it was only after I could hear no more and lost all hope that I was able to be in my music the way I never had been able to before.
That's part of the way the play is structured, that he appears on the stage simultaneously with you. You talk to each other. Was that a concern when you looked at the script, making that comprehensible to an audience? I mean, it works, but I would think that if I just saw that on a page, I would think, wait a minute, is the audience going to go along with this?
Yes. Well, it was a very hard script to read for all kinds of reasons. I could not figure out how it would come across to an audience. And then, I was fated to do this for all kinds of reasons that we don't have time for. But here's one example. I was doing a fundraiser in Phoenix, and I had just gotten the script, and I was talking to people about, God, I don't know, after 46 years going back to Broadway, and I mentioned the name, and this woman came up to me and said, I've seen the play. She said, I saw it at La Jolla Playhouse. And I said, well? And she said, it knocked me over. She said, the power of this play is indescribable. And right then and there, I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a leap of faith. And it's just fascinating to me what people say when they come backstage. Sometimes it's the music. Sometimes it's that interweaving of past and present. But a lot of times it's the mother-daughter stuff.
Well, the music is quite wonderful, and it's performed live during
yes,
the show.
Yes, by a great classical pianist, Diane Marsh. Yes, fantastic.
And sometimes it's played as we see projected the music
yes,
as Beethoven wrote
it.
And that is just... It kind of adds a
yes,
major dimension.
Isn't the set and the projection, aren't they amazing?
So in this case, the playwright also directed.
Yes.
I'd imagine that although it may have been incomprehensible to you, he knew just what he wanted to do because he'd imagined it while he was writing.
Not only that, but he'd done it before. It was done at the arena.
Who played the part?
I don't know. I choose not
to
know.
You couldn't be influenced.
But the man that played Beethoven and Diabelli and Schindler and the librarian Gertie all have played it before in La Jolla and at the Arena Theater in D.C. And so, Moises knew how he wanted it and how it had been and how it worked, but he will be the first to admit that I brought new things to it, and he's very collaborative.
Well, but that it must be interesting to come into a production where many of the people have done it before with other people. I've talked to actors who've gone through that, and sometimes there is an adjustment phase.
Oh, I loved it.
The speed would be different, and
everybody
has to adjust.
Yeah, I could say to them, you got any ideas about how I could do this so that it would be funnier right there? Mm-hmm. I mean, how did whoever else did it do it better? That kind of thing.
And they are very happy to tell you.
Sure.
My guest is Jane Fonda, who is starring in 33 Variations, along with Samantha Mathis, Colin Hanks, Zach Grenier, Don Amendola, Susan Kellerman, Eric Steele, and Diane Walsh. And I was thinking that your father, Henry Fonda, acted many movies and then would also return to the stage.
More than almost any other movie star. He loved live theater.
Did he talk about
yes,
live theater to
yes,
you and the joys of it? So why has it taken you so long?
I was wondering about that myself the other day.
Because you're so obviously enjoying it.
Part of it, yes. Part of it had to do with I had a flourishing movie career. Part of it had to do with the fact that I was married to a man who was a politician, and we were very much rooted in California. So I couldn't exactly, and I had young children come up and move to New York. And then after that, I was married to a man who wouldn't have tolerated my being in one, Ted Turner, who's coming tonight, by the way, to the play, wouldn't have tolerated my staying in one place for 5 months to do a play. So, you know, my marital situation was part of it, as well as my lack of confidence.
And those marriages are often a problem. Mia Farrow and Frank Sinatra divorced because he wanted her to leave Rosemary's Baby in the middle of the shoot. He wanted to go off somewhere, and he said, it's either the movie or me.
Oh, man.
Is that one of the reasons you announced that you were quitting acting after the marriage to Ted Turner broke up?
No, it was actually before Ted Turner. Before I married Ted, I said I didn't want to. I left the business because I didn't find joy in it anymore. I didn't, because I wasn't good with myself. Bien dans ma peau, well in my skin, as the French would say. And it was hard for me to act and find joy in it when I was not feeling good in my skin. So I planned on quitting, and then I married Ted Turner and didn't need to work. So the not working stretched out for 15 years.
So what changed? So when did you
discover
that? I
wrote my memoirs.
And the memoir actually freed you?
Yes. As I was finishing my memoirs, I realized I'm a different human being now, and I think I could find joy in it.
You also wear very little makeup, or at least it looks like you're wearing little makeup.
It looks like. I have lots of makeup.
But you're made up to look like somebody who doesn't wear makeup because you're playing an academic. And that there are an awful lot of actors who would find that very difficult to do. But in your case, it's because you're seeing yourself really as this woman and not as yourself?
I don't know. I sort of slip into her as I'm putting on what actually is a lot of makeup, but the lights are very bright, so it probably is all burnt away.
Well, you're not wearing lipstick.
But I feel, yes, I am, a lot of lipstick. A lot of lipstick, in fact.
It does not look it.
And false eyelashes and, all, you know, all kinds of things. A lot of, I mean, imagine what I'd look like if I really had no makeup on. No, but I just, especially as my body begins to go, I just feel like her. I don't know. She seems like me and me her.
A lot of critics have said that the physical resemblance with your father has become quite strong, or at least becomes apparent while watching the play. Are you aware of that?
I haven't read the reviews, so I have no idea. So and I can't look at myself, so I don't know.
Well, you never read reviews.
Always read reviews.
Oh, you do?
But as an actress friend of mine said the other day, yeah, but in movies, you know, it's over, it's done. So whatever you read can't affect what you do. Plays are different. I don't want to be made self-conscious.
A number of actors have told me that the good reviews are as rough on them as the bad reviews, because if somebody says Jane Fonda was absolutely terrific in the scene where she does such and such, the next night you go out there and that's all you're thinking about. What am I doing here?
My son, who was an actor, said to me after he saw it for the second time the other day, he said, oh, Mom, you know, a really hard thing to act is pure joy. He said, you do pure joy so brilliantly. So I started to do pure joy so over the top that the director said, would you please turn down the joy a little bit.
But, of course, that's what directors are all there for, to keep you on the straight and narrow,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But it's just such fun to have that immediate feedback from an audience and, you know, just see them afterwards so profoundly shaken by the moved by the play.
Jane Fonda is with me. She's returned to Eugene O'Neill in a weird way. She last appeared on Broadway in a Eugene O'Neill play. Now she's at the Eugene O'Neill Theater in 33 Variations. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Later on in the show, Bruce Feiler deconstructs the Passover Seder, plus meet the man who blew the whistle on a Treasury Department scam to sell worthless Treasury bills. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're back with Jane Fonda, who is starring in 33 Variations, Moises Kaufman's play, which also stars Samantha Mathis, Colin Hanks, and others. I don't want to go through the whole list, but it's a wonderful cast, a wonderful ensemble cast. And it was suddenly dawned on me in the middle of watching it that Colin Hanks is Tom Hanks' son, and Tom Hanks plays the Henry Fonda roles these days. I don't know why that became an object of real fascination for me, but I saw it's one of those things where you start tying everything up.
It's interesting, yeah.
You play Dr. Catherine Brandt, as you said, this American musicologist who goes to Bonn to learn why Beethoven devoted so much time to writing variations on a waltz of negligible musical interest. It had been written by a music publisher who is a major character in the play as well. She suffers from ALS, and part of the plot involves the parallel races between her desire to accomplish her goal of figuring out what Beethoven was up to and Beethoven completing all of these variations.
Before he goes totally deaf and then becomes too ill to work.
And he originally plans, at least according to the play, to write maybe 3, then 9, then 11 variations, and at a certain point abandons the project to complete the mass and
the ninth.
Pretty heavyweight stuff.
Yeah.
And then comes back to this very intimate music.
Yeah.
And comes up with 33 variations.
Yeah, yeah. It's so obsessed with it that in one scene in the play, he's run out of paper, so he writes on the shutters of his rented room. Yes, he said, there is still so much left in the waltz. This is going to revolutionize variation form.
And the reason he runs out of paper is because
he's broke.
Yeah, he's broke all the time.
He's broke.
We think of Beethoven as having been a huge musical star during his lifetime, but he had gone into eclipse at this point.
Yes, artists love the play so much because it shows how even for Beethoven, rubbing two pennies together was challenging. He was always having to move from place to place because he couldn't pay his rent, and he'd run out of paper and he'd run out of ink, and you know, he's dressed in rags.
And he was a pain in the butt to some degree. I mean, he was a difficult man who,
as many artists are,
he considered himself a genius no matter what, and he expected people to treat him with that kind of respect.
Yes.
So has your appreciation for his music and for Beethoven as a man deepened over the course of the play?
Yes, it's gone from awe to worship. Yes, amazing. I haven't had time to do any much reading, but when the play's over, I want to read even more about Beethoven. I'm very fascinated by him. I love the fact that people leave the play feeling that they've really... they're taking something away. They really learned something, you know, which is unusual.
Well, you learn something without it being done in a didactic way,
right.
And that's important. If you start thinking, well, I've come to the theater to learn something, you're never going to be as happy.
No, you're not aware of learning.
I talked about the physical aspect of this, and I read that you injured your shoulder while you were using a walker as a prop during the show. Is it more challenging to use a walker than it would appear?
Well, if you're doing it wrong, because you have to put all your weight on one particular side of your body, and I just overdid it. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you just go get a cortisone shot.
Aren't we lucky
to live
hurt
in such
badly?
Time? No.
You didn't need the operation that A-Rod needed. It's the same. You injured
the
labrum,
didn't
you?
But here's something weird. Before the day before, when I hadn't yet been able to get into the hospital to get a shot, I played the whole performance with a cane. Nobody noticed, including the curtain call, and nobody noticed.
Because that's usually what happens during the curtain call. You come out, the person who has been
limping,
suddenly comes out as perfectly good health.
Right.
The cripple of Inishman, the guy was so effective, you really were convinced that he had this terrible deformity, and then at the end he hops onto the stage. It's kind of disappointing. But then again, people die during the course of plays, and somehow they come back to life.
To get the applause, yes.
Your character is kind of cold and aloof as a result. As you pointed out earlier, she and her adult daughter, Clara, who's played by Samantha Mathis, have a difficult relationship. Has that relationship reminded you at all of your relationship with your father?
Absolutely. There are times in the play. There are times in the play when I hear my voice coming out of my mouth, and it reminds me of my father. Yes, especially the way he treated me in On Golden Pond, and several people have commented to me on that.
How did he treat you in On Golden Pond? That play, that film seems like such a wonderful love fest.
Well, how about when he says to me, I didn't know, I just thought we didn't like each other. I mean, when I try to become friends with him and he, you know, says such cruel things to me.
Wow.
And he's was always putting me down.
So he, when he played those grumpy people, he was really being typecast.
Well, he didn't always play the grumpy people. That's why Tom Hanks is playing him.
In the other parts. But he also played villains, a lot more villains than Tom Hanks would. I remember him in Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah,
he was about
the
meanest gunslinger that ever lived.
Yeah, he didn't play too many grumpies or too many villains. But, you know, he was withdrawn and judgmental in real life as well. And my character is very judgmental and cannot stand the fact that her daughter might be mediocre. Perhaps that's why I'm so fascinated that Beethoven would spend all this time on what is considered a mediocre waltz.
Mm-hmm. Although he transformed it into something quite wonderful. And this is also a play about transformation.
That's right. Or as I call it, transfiguration, making something into its better self. Yes.
You've talked about the troubled relationship you've had with your own daughter, Vanessa, from your first marriage to Roger Vadim. And you blame yourself for not being emotionally available to her when she was young, although I think you get along better with her now than you did with your father on Golden Pond. Has she seen 33 Variations?
She saw it in dress rehearsal, and she's coming back with her children, my grandchildren, 10 and 6, and the three of them will see it next Sunday. I'm not sure how the 6-year-old will respond, but the 10-year-old is quite profound and will probably kind of get it.
Well, this is not a play that a 6-year-old can't see. It's just a play that a 6-year-old might not understand.
Right.
Jane Fonda is my guest. She is starring in 33 Variations now at the Eugene O'Neill Theater, running through May because you have other commitments?
Yes, it's a limited engagement. I wonder what my granddaughter will think when Beethoven urinates on the floor.
It's okay. It's done discreetly. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You've been writing a blog since early January when you came to New York to start work on the play. And I understand listeners can actually follow it by going to janefonda.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first blog you've written?
I never even Googled until last summer. I was a complete Luddite. But I turned 71. It was the beginning of a new year. I was going to embark on this new adventure after all this time. And a techie friend of mine in Atlanta said, I'll help you set up a blog. James Andrews is his name. And I thought, well, day to day, keeping a kind of a journal for people to see what it's like for me to go through this, that might be interesting. And actually, it has proven very interesting for my blog readers and for me to get feedback immediately, not only from when I'm on stage at night, but from the blogosphere as well. And I'm Twittering, and I'm on Facebook.
Twittering, too.
And Facebook, yes.
By gosh. When do you have time? You're on the stage throughout the whole play.
It takes about 2 minutes.
Uh-huh. Well, I also have a Facebook page, but I must admit members of my staff they don't want me to muck it up. So how do you decide what to include in your blog? Do you ever worry about it revealing a little bit too much?
Not anymore. After my memoir, are you kidding? There's not much to worry about. No, I just kind of know what will be interesting to people. And given the people who come back that I photograph, you know, everyone from Yoko Ono. Well, tonight it'll be Ted Turner and Erica Jong, and the other night it was Tom Hanks and Siegfried. I mean, you know, it's always interesting people, and I put their pictures on my blog and talk about them. But what I like the most is when I'm talking about how I feel about the play and certain experiences. Like, I haven't had time yet to really write about my relationship to the other actors in the play and little rituals that we have.
things do change over the course of a play. Some actors have told me that they feel often when the play closes, unless it goes on forever, that they've just really figured out their characters.
Mm-hmm. I never expected that I would be enjoying it more as it goes on. I'm having a much better time now and a richer time than I did in the beginning.
Because in a movie, by the third or fourth or fifth take, you're
yes.
starting to get annoyed
right.
that they want to do another one.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'm going to miss this experience. I hope I get offered another really good play again.
You've written in the blog about working with Moises Kaufman, who won a Pulitzer Prize for I Am My Own Wife. And you say that you felt almost bereft when he had to go out of town for a while to work on another project.
I know. I felt so jealous. He says he'll come back every 2 weeks. He did come back after 2 weeks after we opened and gave me notes. And, oh, God, they made me so happy. And they for sure improved the play. You know, I really miss his notes. We get along so well.
Did he personally approach you about
yes.
being in it?
Yes. Well, he sent me an email. And we have a mutual friend, Eve Ensler. She gave me a heads up that he was going to be contacting me. And he sent me the script. And then we had dinner at the Algonquin and kind of fell in love. We get along really well. He's very collaborative.
I understand that you have plans to do a film with Eve Ensler later this year.
Oh, yes.
What's that about?
I'm not going to tell you. Mm. But it's good.
What about the announcement that you're going to go to the Himalayas when the play closes? Is that going to be for
That'll
work
be
or for pleasure?
That'll be in 2010. That'll be for spirituality.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But meanwhile, right now, you're committed to this. I was curious about somebody who calls herself a morning person being out there every night.
You can't
go to
it.
Bed until
one
way
or
up
two
to midnight.
In the morning. I know it's very. I'm kind of. It is so unusual for me because I usually go to sleep at 9 and get up at 5, and so I'm still sort of. You know, I'm sitting at Joe Allen's or someplace at 1 o'clock in the morning, saying, "Well, God, look at me! I cannot believe that I have this whole nightlife now."
So you've probably screwed up all your circadian rhythms.
Well, I've gotten into the rut.
I've also read that your exercise videos are still the best-selling exercise videos ever. Have you been able to set aside any time to work out while you're on this?
Yes, 3 times a week I do Pilates.
And do you ever do your own tapes or do you just do the Pilates?
Well, lately I've just done Pilates. I mean, I sometimes do, but I didn't bring them with me.
Mm-hmm. You probably know them by heart anyway.
Not really. I did 23 of them.
If you look at your old movies, are you surprised by what you see sometimes?
I don't look at my old movies.
You mean you wouldn't look at Clued again, even though that was such a great performance?
I looked at all of them when I was doing my memoir, and I don't. I sometimes look at On Golden Pond and sob uncontrollably.
Because that almost felt autobiographical in
and
some
it's
ways.
You know, it's more my dad and Catherine than it is me, and I do watch that. And I have watched Clute, yeah, but, you know, there's only so much time left. Why am I going to look at my old movies, you know?
Well, they were good, you know.
I want to go out and look at new movies.
But you're writing a new memoir, aren't you?
I'm writing a book about aging called The Third Act, Entering Primetime.
Will it pick up where my life so far left off?
Well, some of it does, yeah, some of it does. I'm about halfway through. It's a year late.
Hmm. Well, right now, in the old days, most plays had 3 acts, but now they've found a way to cut them up into 2 acts.
Or not, or one. You know, some of the plays out there now don't even have an intermission.
Yeah, so, but this one does.
Mine does.
And allows you to catch your breath. Those intermissions are often important because they suggest a certain transition in time.
Well, they certainly do for my play. Yeah, there's a big move forward.
We go from Bonn to Vienna.
Yes, and we go from me walking with a cane to me unable to walk without a walker, and Beethoven deteriorating also. And as is often the case with Moises' work, I find, as you start off and it's kind of in the head, it's sort of cerebral, and you think, well, God, where's this going, and how are all these things going to be reconciled, and where, you know, like, and then along comes the second act, and it's the second act that really, whew, really packs the wallop.
When one of my producers went to see the play last week, someone's cell phone rang.
Oh.
Does that still happen frequently?
It's only happened once.
Oh, and that was the time.
It was during the scene called Limbo when I'm hallucinating and I'm talking to Beethoven, and I looked in his eyes, and I know he looked in mine, and it was like, well, I can't say it on the air.
Yeah.
I wanted to leap off the stage and strangle the person.
Because it really throws
it
you
really
off, doesn't
it? It really threw us. It really did. And I've heard there are some performers, Patti LuPone, for example, who just stop the show.
Yeah, she says, I'll wait until you turn off the cell phone.
Right. People have no idea how horrible it is. Or candy wrappers and, you know,
you hear
stuff
it all.
Like that. You hear it all. Most of the time, it's... you could hear a pin drop, and especially in the second act.
Just one more thing, because we're pretty much out of time. How does it feel to be living in New York again? I realize it's temporarily. You're going to be going back to Atlanta after the show closes, aren't you?
Yes. Well, I'm doing another movie, and that'll be shot somewhere else. But my home is in Atlanta. It's nice. I like New York. But what I like most is the Broadway theater community. I love being part of that community. I'm a little homesick. I like the slower pace of Atlanta.
Well, you haven't lived here since the 60s.
The 50s.
So that we're talking about a long
very
time and a lot of changes in this city.
A lot more people, yes.
But and it just feels too fast for you now?
I'll give you an example. Everyday traffic now only existed then at Christmas. You could roll a bowling ball down Fifth Avenue on Sundays. You know, that's how different it was.
Well, I'm not sure I want to roll a bowling ball down Fifth Avenue.
Oh, come on. Not now.
Jane Fonda starring in Moises Kaufman's 33 Variations. She's just marvelous in it. And so is the rest of the cast, Samantha Mathis, Colin Hanks, Zach Grenier, Don Amendola, Susan Kellerman, Eric Steele, and Diane Walsh. And I want to thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you for having me. It's good to talk to you again.